This episode is brought to you by Baby Audio, maker of creative plugin effects and instruments for music production and mixing. Baby Audio plugins are all about adding character to your mix, from stylish heavy compression with iHeart New York 2 to radical vocal processing with their latest release, Humanoid. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/babyaudio to learn more and take 15% off any order with the code MIXINGMUSIC. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me today is a special guest, the host of the exclusive episodes, mix engineer extraordinaire, James from James Dean Mixes. Hello, James.
Hello. Yes, that's me, James Dean, the one and only famous James Dean in history.
That's right.
The most famous James Dean.
Before we started recording, James, tell me... Your parents thought you were going to have Down syndrome?
Yes. This is a very good topic on a Mixing Music Podcast.
They're like, we counted an extra chromosome.
I don't remember specifically if it was my test came back just wrong saying that,
or like
if the doctor read someone else's. But yeah, so for like a week, there's some tests you could take before your kid's born. Like my parents were like, thought I was going to have Down syndrome, and they were like preparing for it. And then I don't remember what it was. It was something... It was either someone else's results they got back, or they just
misread
it. Dude,
that sucks. You could have been their favorite child, but instead now you're just like one of their...
I still am their favorite, so it's like, I'm doing music in LA and I'm still the favorite. I don't know how that works, but it is.
Welcome to the show. If you don't know James is the host of the exclusive content. You may have heard his voice. He's been on the show a couple times, but... James is awesome and has a lot of great thoughts. He's a good friend of mine, and we talk way too long. Most of our conversations when you come over to record podcast episodes is like not about the podcast.
Yeah.
We just talk off mic.
We end up talking too long, and then we're like, shoot, we got to go to record.
That's what ends up happening. But welcome back to the show, James.
Thank you.
Today, I want you to help me teach a topic. I don't know what the topic is going to be called or what this episode is going to be titled.
Yeah.
But the story of this topic and this episode is I had an intern who recently just left to go back to school. Her name was Miranda. She was amazing. And she came over for a month and was shadowing and helping me with mixes and stuff. And she was getting school credit. And we were talking about referencing music and referencing mixes and how to listen to songs in order to build a repertoire of tools to use for your own mixes. Mm-hmm. So it's more about how to technically listen to songs in order to utilize what you hear in your own mixes.
Yeah.
There's another topic that goes into this. So there's going to be two sections of this. The first section is the five, I've tried to break it down for her, the five technical things to listen for. Mm-hmm. When listening to songs and other mixes. So like technical listening. And then part two is about the importance of bridging the gap between the technical and the emotional. So just because you can hear compression or you can hear tonal balance and brightness doesn't mean that you'll be a good mixer. The real mark of a good mixer is to be able to fully understand how the technical and the emotional interplay. For example, if a client wants more intimacy in a song, how do you add intimacy? Well, it depends. If it's a vocal, it may be low mids.
Yeah.
It may be adding warmth. It may be a lack of compression or maybe more compression. Like it depends on the context and understanding what are your options and tools to add intimacy.
And even understanding what type of intimacy.
Yeah,
there's Frank Ocean, very beautiful, reverby intimacy. But then there's Damien Rice, who's very acoustic, very dry. Like, I'm pretty sure he has like no reverb on his vocal intimacy as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah.
And that's the point of today's episode is to talk about the five technical things that I'm going to bring up. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you have a lot of experience just listening to songs in your mixing position, which is always something that we recommend.
Yeah.
Mixing and referencing to songs from a mixing position, not just in your car, not just in your Apple AirPods, but like whatever you mix on, whether it's headphones or your speakers in your mixing position.
All right. Yeah. Can I actually give a little backstory just real quick about, I guess, just understanding referencing and stuff?
Sure. Ask me permission.
Fine. thank you. Yes. DK is very controlling behind the scenes.
okay.
If you're watching the video version, you'll notice I flinch whenever he moves, if that indicates anything. No, it's, so for me, I think it's very important understanding and referencing. I currently live in a 2-bedroom apartment where we have a room that's just my studio that I've been able to set up. But only a few months ago, we were working out of 1-bedroom and my mixing setup was set up in the corner of our living room. And I was able to create like as best as I could acoustic treatment around me, kind of created a little U-shaped, you call it attack wall. But still not an ideal setup. And so I had to rely very heavily on referencing and understanding how mixes that I knew I loved, how they translated there and understanding what they sound like there. And in that setup, I got clients. I like won over people. I was able to get really good mixes out of it. But yeah, anyway, so I think it's very important to understand and to be able to use references to understand your setup and just, again, what DK is going to go into, like just the different aspects of a mix.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think it's interesting, like when I used to do on YouTube and Twitch live streaming mix feedback, mm-hmm. it's very obvious when someone didn't reference at all.
Yeah.
Because it's so out of the ballpark. There's way too much low end. And if they had just listened to any song, they would have been like, oh, this is like an alien mix.
Yeah.
I mix this for aliens. Like there's no point of reference for anything remotely on this universe, in this universe. It's just so off. And that's why like anybody who's mixer or intermediate, and this is why a lot of the people that are even at advanced levels, like Bob Horn, refuses to submit a mix without referencing in multiple different ways.
Yeah. Nice, yeah.
With like popular hit songs.
Yeah.
So referencing is super important. So here's a list of 5 things. And this is just a personal list that I made for Miranda. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it down because I thought I was so genius. There's probably more beyond this, but I'm going to leave it at these 5 things here. 5 things that you should be listening out for. Number 1 is frequencies. And this is overall and tracks. Overall meaning tonal balance of a song. John Mayer is very warm, a lot of low mid focus. Rock music in general is a lot of mid-focus. Hip-hop is mid-scooped and low-end focused and top-end focused. Being able to distinguish those, as well as tracks. How bright or dark is the snare drum in this track, in this track, in this genre, in this song, in a different genre, in this song, in the same genre, but like totally, like so being able to distinguish the frequencies of individual tracks and then tonal balance or even buses. Number 1 is frequencies, right? Mm-hmm. Number 2 is compression. And to put it in a different word, not listening for compressions directly, but more for loudness, aka density.
Yeah.
The density of a song and loudness. So it's not necessarily listening for attack and release time, but I think loudness and density is a aspect of mixing that should be utilized. Mm-hmm. For example, something that really is significantly less compressed, like a classical song or a jazz song, emotionally feels different than if you were to compress the shit out of a jazz song.
Yeah.
So listening for density and loudness. Number 2. Number 3 is volumes. This is for buses and individual tracks, like the volume of the drum set in this song versus another song versus this genre versus a different song in the same genre and this song in a different genre, same genre. And as well as individual tracks, the level of the vocals in this song versus another song, the level of the snare in this song, another song. Stevie Wonder's hi-hats are always stupid loud. Mm-hmm. Same thing with like trap hats and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And then that also goes into prioritization, like back and forth, front to back kind of depth there. Things that are really loud seem to be a priority and really close to you. The 4th thing is width. Width in the sense of panning, left to right panning and placement. That's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing is effects, use of reverbs and delays or lack of. And then those are the 5 things. So again, frequencies, compression, volume, width, and effects.
Yeah.
Those are the 5 things that we listen for. those are, tell me, give me some thoughts on songs that you've been listening to recently or that you've listened to in the past that stand out to you of any of these five categories. James, like, what are some, for me, like, John Mayer is notoriously warm.
It's notoriously warm and notoriously dry.
Yes.
Manny Mariquin has specifically talked about how when he started mixing for John Mayer for Gravity, how it wasn't John Mayer's idea. He just thought, maybe I'll just try it with no reverb. And like John Mayer walked in and he was like, it took him a minute to start to like it. But then he was like, wait, I actually do kind of like this without any reverb.
Yeah.
But yeah. In terms of songs that I really...
Genre-wise too, yeah.
I really like Montero. That's, you know, that's like...
Lil Nas X.
Lil Nas X. Yeah, that's, I think that's one of the best, for my taste...
Is that Tizio?
One of the best... Serving Ganea, although he did another two songs on the album too.
So Serving Ganea did.
But that one is super high end, like crispy and stuff. And it is just, it's very, the density is a very interesting thing in it because it doesn't feel super dense. It just feels really big, if that makes sense. And I think that's a production thing too, is they made sure to produce leaving space in mind. So like there's this bass synth that goes throughout it that like, doesn't take up too much space, and they left room for it though, so it sounds big and things like that. It sounds loud. It, because when I showed it to you, your ear was like, "Oh man, this is like really top end heavy."
It's really bright.
Yeah, you thought it was really bright, which is something that I liked with my thing. Yeah, it just sounds good. Like that's like the main thing I could think about it.
And like to that point, like when you have something that's top end heavy, it feels very pop. Pop in general, like if you listen to Ariana Grande's top end heavy. And I think part of that trend right now is very heavily influenced from trap music. Because trap music is always consistent. R&B, like pop R&B, like Chris Brown and trap has always been like mid-scooped and top end heavy, top and low and heavy. So I think that's could be part of it.
Yeah.
There is something about Lil Nas X, even with the country song, felt reminiscent of a hip-hop song. You know what I'm saying?
No, that makes sense.
So I think maybe that has to do something with that.
Yeah. Volume-wise, again, since it is a fairly... There probably are a lot of smaller tracks that we don't hear, but like the main instruments are all very forward. So everything is fairly turned up. And there's... Again, I think it was from the beginning of production. It's just I think they did a good job of thinking of where everything will have space. And so like the guitars are very up close. The percussion, the snaps are very bright. They did a good job at making it very bright, but not harsh. Where to the contrary, Frank Ocean's songs I find are, they have an odd, what some would consider harshness, but it's a very tasteful harshness in it. Cause it gives a very raw, intimate feeling because it's so like pokey. That makes sense. But it doesn't sound bad for my ear. That's like what I hear with it.
That's amazing that you're able to distinguish that. And the point of this five, by itself, being able to recognize by itself is only partially useful. The real usefulness of this list of five comes from the second part, which is using these list of five different technical thinking processes or these technical categories. How does that affect the song, the emotional response of the song or the image of the song?
Yeah.
So for example, we did give a little hint on that when I said the top brightness makes it feel pop or hip hop. Right?
Yeah.
That's like a perfect example of me interpreting technical things into an emotional image or an image. It's really interesting. I think this is really the job of a mixer, is the middleman or being able to translate emotional and technical. That's the real job of a mixer. A producer should be able to say, I want this song to sound more blue. And then the engineer hears that, takes this ambiguous emotional thing and knows how to make the song sound more blue in a technical way.
Yeah.
It's really the It's the guide between the emotional and the technical. And this is part of the reason why mixing is fairly creative.
Yeah.
Is we interpret different things and we don't have a set way of doing things. It's, if there was a set way of mixing a song when it was the same tools every single time, we wouldn't need as much human help. Mm-hmm. And I think this is part of the reason against AI and stuff is because AI will pick a direction and it'll be really good in that direction. But you might find out that the direction that it gets to 100% of the way is not the direction that was best for the song. Yeah. Or like there's a million different directions that you could go.
Yeah.
So it's like just because you can get to one direction well doesn't mean... So it's really interesting. I think the human response and inclinations and feelings and use of imagery and emotional response is the creative part of the mixing. So in your case, you were talking about Montero. Let's go back to that for a second. Tell me about the use of let's talk about reverbs and delays, effects, right? Which is number five in the five categories.
Yeah.
Tell me about a little bit about the technical things that you remember from Montero effects wise, and then tell me about how that changed the song emotionally or image wise.
For how I hear, I'm like worried that like someone who is a like even like bigger fan of the song is going to, but like it has, the only way I would describe it is it has a dry feel, but there are definitely effects on it. So like when he, like I bet like he has, it sounds like there's some kind of a maybe slapback delay to give width, but because of that quote unquote dryness feeling, it opens it up so that for some moments, like this is the moment where he goes, "Where I envy," they get to do this little delay effect, and it sounds massive because of how like the contrast of going from like a not super wet sound to like doing that. I think that's cool, and with the claps, they have like these claps and snaps, they sound super wide. And so like, if you have headphones on, you hear them. It's like almost they're like right there against your ears. That adds to a sense of immersion.
It's very aggressive.
It's a very aggressive song, which I think is something interesting to think of too. I guess that kind of goes into frequencies. Top end gives aggressiveness, not bad. But like, for example, people who study to lo-fi beats, that's easier to study to, and it's not as in your face because lo-fi beats generally don't have much high end. They don't have much low end. It's just middle and it's very relaxed, not much going on. Where this song is meant to grab your attention and to like hold on to you and stuff. And it doesn't feel overly compressed either, which I think gives it space for like when it does open up and like feel bigger.
Just a quick heads up for you. Right now, you can grab four incredible free plugins over at mixingmusicpodcast.com/babyaudio. These are must-haves and they're totally free, no strings attached. Lou and I have been using Baby Audio forever, and I'm telling you, these plugins are game changers. They've got some killer paid plugins too, like Humanoid, their new vocal transformer and tuner. It's perfect for creating unique vocal effects and hard tuning. And even though I'm not a producer, I know they got some insane synths for the producers out there. For my mixes, I can't live without Tape, both versions of I Heart New York, Comeback Kid, and Parallel Aggressor. These are pretty much in every session that I do, no joke. So don't miss out. Head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/babyaudio, grab those free plugins, and if you want to upgrade, use the code MIXINGMUSIC for 15% off any order. You'll save big and get the tools to make your mixes sound incredible. Again, that's mixingmusicpodcast.com/babyaudio. Now back to the show. It's interesting because like if I remember correctly, I haven't listened to Montero in a long time.
Yeah.
It probably is hyper compressed. But I wonder if that feeling of density comes from good arrangement.
Yeah.
And you mentioned like opening it up from like the arrangement side of things, like there's less going on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it feels controlled. So I guess you're right. It could be a compressed thing. But yeah, and I think it is an arrangement thing too.
Yeah, I think is important to say. Another thing that like, okay, let's see here. What's another song that you can break down for us in real time that you haven't, that thinking about using this guide that we just created?
There's a Spanish song. This has recently been a mix that I've been loving so much. It's a song in Spanish and it's a very...
You're looking for it right now.
Si antes te hubiera conocido by Carol G.
Carol G. Yeah.
Very crispy.
Crispy.
It's a very light mix.
Light as in top end heavy? What does that mean? Light as in not dense?
Light as in Lay's chips. That's like...
All right, so there's the emotional aspect. Explain that to us in technical terms.
It's a very percussive song, as like the genre that it's in is like very bongos and very just like shakers and stuff. yeah, just very, it's very top end heavy to create that kind of sense of crispiness. And it, there's not much, like throughout the whole song, there's not much low end information there. There are some instruments that come in every now and again that fill out the low end, but it's not like you're sitting there feeling the low end. That makes sense.
It's not a Migos song.
No, yeah, it's which is, it gives an advantage too, right? Whenever like these little lower end, like something that's close to a kick or something like that comes in, it fills out very nice because there's nothing else really taking up that space. If I listen to it, so like frequency wise, I'll just like go through the list. Like frequency wise, very crispy, very top end heavy, like
bright, yeah,
bright air. Which again, it's an interesting balance between being able to get that without a feeling of harshness. That's a tricky thing to do, mixing wise sometimes. And compression wise, it feels very dynamic. Like everything, everything's moving.
Well, while you're going through this list, what are the frequencies, the brightness, how does that translate emotionally? What is that? Because it's light, how does it, how does that impact like the image of the song or the emotional response of the song?
I think for this song, it creates a feeling of like being immersed in it.
Yeah, but you said lightness. It feels light.
Yeah, it feels light.
Agile?
It's easy on the ears. You know, like you know, like how like sometimes you listen to, even though they could be great mixes, like you could feel kind of burnt out listening to a lot of like pop music and stuff because it is very in your face frequency wise.
Yeah.
Where like at least songs like this, they feel really crispy and light, and it's less for me hard on the eardrums and stuff. Like I have a good time listening to it.
So the compression thing, you talked about compression and density there. How does that affect the image of the song, you think?
I think that adds like it's I think that's a factor that makes it feel so light, is that it's very, I don't know, around you. This is interesting, breaking down the song. I never like thought about it. Well, broken down this specific song down like this. I'm like playing through it in my head. But yeah, I guess density, it doesn't feel dense. Like it feels very spacious, which is interesting now that I'm thinking about it, because it does have a decent amount of instruments play throughout it. But I guess they just did a good job at making it not feel super dense.
And what is the lack of density? What does that mean for you? It's just easier to listen to? It's less aggressive? It's more aggressive?
It doesn't feel like there's like a bunch of stuff going on.
Cool.
Yeah. Volume wise, volume is an interesting thing in this genre. This specific song, the instrumentals are more upfront with the vocals, but other songs I listen to in this genre, it's usually the vocals are very upfront and the instruments are kind of pushed back.
And what is the genre?
I don't even know what to...
Is it reggaeton?
It's not reggaeton, no. It's cumbia? Like, it's a very, possibly, it's a very like dance music, kind of salsa kind of music. In a sense, but like pop,
it's not
salsa,
banda.
Yeah.
I don't know, like Latin, some sort of sub Latin genre.
Yeah, I wish I knew the name of it, but like other songs I listen to the genre, it's usually the vocal very upfront, and like it could be a little back with the instruments. And then the width, it's a very wide sounding song, and I feel like frequency and width kind of can go hand in hand. We're adding top end to things that are on the sides to make them feel even wider. And so I think that's a big factor. Excuse me, for making it sound like
so,
that.
So, yeah. So, I mean, compared to other songs in this genre where the vocal is more upfront, and then this song you said the instrumental is in line with the vocal a little bit.
Yeah.
How does that change emotionally compared to the ones where the vocals are significantly more upfront?
I think it's an intimacy thing. The other one, I don't remember the name that comes to mind, is it's like an intentional, meant to feel like the lady's just singing along to a record kind of thing.
Yeah, it feels like a song where it's the singer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like Mariah Carey is usually out front because she's the singer. She's the star.
Yeah, there's songs where, it's like their voice is the main talent and then everything else is there. Still a great arrangement, but just kind of pushed back.
Does it feel more musical in that sense?
Yeah, and it does. Yeah, it feels more musical, but less dancey. Where this one, the instrumentals are more up front, so it feels more dancey.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Dancy is a great way to translate that in image wise. Yeah.
Yeah. And then width, it contributes to that. And I think the effects and width go hand in hand in this as well. My guess with how they mixed this is they did some kind of a Haas effect thing to help those shakers and little percussion bongos, like things like that, sound a little wider, is having a very slight Haas effect kind of delay going on.
By the way, if you're unfamiliar with Haas effect, it's just delaying the left and right channels just a little bit to add width.
Yeah.
It's like a few milliseconds.
Yeah. And it helps. So even if you have something already panned, like, yeah, that'll help it add sound even wider. But yeah, I don't know. I think of that. Like, what, I guess for you, what's an example that you think of with this? Because I know you have some references that you listen to.
Oh, yeah. A ton of references. Let me look up songs that I like and listen to. Even songs that I've mixed myself, listening back to it. Okay, I'm going to my DK's favorites. And something that's off the top of my head. Let's see here. Something that I remember. Anything Wolfpack. Let's just go with Wolfpack.
Or, yeah. What's that? Oh, or an interesting one is, what's that one Lewis Cole one? The Government Knows? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh.
I think that's a very interesting case study for this. Yeah.
Okay. Sweet. Government Knows by Knower.
Yeah. And what do they know? What does the government know, DK?
The government knows when you masturbate, according to this song. It's a great, it's as weird as the lyrics are and as like funny as it is, it's like a really great mix.
Yeah.
Okay, we can talk about that. Yeah. Frequencies wise, it's filled out in the low end and the top end. In his personal stuff, and as for comparison, in his personal stuff, it's more like jazz bass, a lot more live, so it's more like mid-focused. Mm-hmm. There's low end and top end, but this feels like a proper digital production, where it is, the extension goes all the way down. It's an EDM song. It's a dance song through and through, just from a frequencies perspective.
Yeah.
His other song is more jazz, more like mid-range focus, not too much top-end extension, not too much, which also adds to the feeling of live. Like, it feels very live and intimate, like on a stage, where this one feels very digital. The Government Knows is, proper EDM in that sense. Full use of the entire canvas. Compression, it's really interesting. In the verse, it's very dense. So it removes the sensation of like how, when the drops comes, like how will this get louder? Like, you're like thinking about it for like from a production perspective, every time the chorus drops, there's like a bump in volume, right? But the compression, like how compressed the verse is, there's this sensation of density that you like, you realize like, oh, you're trapped in a corner. Like, how do you actually make the drop hit when it's already so dense? And then you hear the chorus drop and it explodes and there's like this sensation of like surprise, which is what you want for like an EDM drop, right? Like this like, ah, like you never saw that coming. And I think he uses compression really good there to like kind of trick the mind subconsciously. And I know I'm being overly technical and listening to it from a technical engineering perspective, but I think this is important because I think that emotionally translates to the layman as well, to like the casual listener. Like, there is a sensation of like, where is this going to go? And then to anybody, non-engineers too, like the drop is very aggressive and louder and just like, whoa, it's a surprise as everybody. It's like really well mixed in that sense. Volumes wise, everything is pretty close together. There is a vocal on the song. I don't remember exactly where the vocal is placed, but it's kind of in the mix, I think. Remember, Genevieve is more in the mix. She does a great job. It's very aggressive, not super top end heavy in the traditional sense, but it is using the full entire spectrum. The bass goes all the way down. It does, if I remember correctly, the verse is not, the bass extension is not as deep in the verse, and then it gets really deep in the hook, in the chorus, in the drop. You're going to have to, listeners of the podcast, you're going to have to listen to this song and think about this in the same way that I'm doing it. Volume-wise, really interesting. Again, what I've already kind of hinted at this already. The verse feels loud. The density of it adds to a loudness factor. But when you get to the drop, he must have automated some sort of mix bus or some sort of master bus. He must have automated some sort of like bus or VCA or something to lower the volume of the verse. Because the density of the verse is there. It feels like it's loud. But then the chorus explodes and it gets even louder. So there must be some sort of interplay in volume and automation.
Do you think it factors? Because from what I remember, the verses, it's the vocal that's very upfront though.
The verses?
Right. Aren't the verses like very, the vocals very upfront and then it opens? And so maybe it could be like the instruments are kind of down and then they.
I don't remember. I don't remember off the top of my head. I'm trying to remember too. I haven't like. The reference that I use for that song is the explosion factor from verse to chorus. And like, it really does explode. And even though the verse is just as dense. So it's like, I like to use this as a reference to like, okay, like when I'm playing a song and there's a really quiet, mixing a song and there's a really quiet verse mm-hmm. and then there's like an explosive chorus, like I always reference that song. I think about that song and the emotional responses I get from it every single time the chorus drops, which is a sensation of surprise.
Yeah.
And like, not aggression, but like, it's like a rager. Like I want to just like start dancing. And that emotional response that I get from the volume change of verse to chorus direct is like so impactful. And when I mix a song where the chorus or like the pre-chorus is quieter and into the chorus, like if I'm not very careful, I may accidentally overcompress the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And that jump, that impact isn't as strong. So then I have to automate something or change my mixing or my mix bus processing in order to retain or artificially recreate that jump in energy from quiet section to loud section. And that's the reference song that I use.
And I think something that like practically people would do with that is whether I guess in like production or mixing is if they have either that specific song or a song like that where they love how it blows up and opens up, using it as a reference, it could also be a good reference as to like maybe going too big on the blow up part of your section too. So like if you're comparing, you have to ask yourself, why is my song feeling like too much when it blows up versus this song not, even though it has a bigger blow up than mine? That makes sense.
Interesting. I wonder, just from a technical perspective, or an emotional perspective.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's possible to have too much of a dynamic change.
Yeah. Oh, it could
not be. Not from a technical perspective, but from an emotional perspective. Hmm. Because I have a feeling that most people lean into not enough dynamic change or not enough change from verse to chorus or pre-chorus to chorus or whatever in the drops, which is like the secret of every EDM song. Like when you drop it, like it's got to be, like it has to surprise you.
Yeah.
Right? Like every EDM artist has like tropes where they like kind of get into like, and like vinyl tape stop, and then all of a sudden it's like bah, it comes in, whether it's a use of like effects or like volume. Anyway, the same thing with the width and the effects. I don't remember off the top of my head because I haven't listened to it technically like this, because it's hard to listen to it technically because the song is so good.
Yeah.
In that sense too. Width and effects, I think there was a sensation of less width and less effects in, or sorry, more reverbs in the verses and less in the chorus. But it does expand from verse to chorus in width-wise. The thing with like EDM or like funky type stuff is when things are dry, it feels really tight.
Mm-hmm.
And like it gives a sensation of groove. Like you kind of have like when you have too much reverb on like a funk song or like a very rhythmic song, it kind of like smears the rhythm.
Yeah.
And so it's like there's this sensation of drive and danceability that comes from dryness in like a funk soul neo fusion song. I think is utilized well in this song, if I remember correctly. And yeah, that's kind of like the emotional response and the imagery as I break down that song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this list is super important and you should be practicing this always constantly. Like as a mixer, analyzing new music, current music, trending music, and genres, regions, music like Afropop, Latin music, Japanese music, J-pop versus J-rock. When you break down songs like this, you'll notice patterns.
Yeah.
And you'll notice not just like technical patterns of like Japanese J-pop, there's like no bass in it.
Yeah.
But like for the one song that is J-pop that does have bass, it emotionally feels different and it stands out.
Yeah.
And is that a good thing or a bad thing? What does it feel like? Because there's a sensation where if I listen to Japanese music, there's a few bands out there that like they actually add in the low end extension. And it's like, that feels American. That feels weirdly American.
Mm, yeah.
And I don't, again, like there's the nuance of, am I just hearing that because I'm a technical mixer? And mm-hmm. I think there's an argument to be made about that. But I would go as far as to say that even if someone that is like just a casual listener can't quite tell, like can't quite articulate why, I think the emotional aspect is something that we can all kind of feel.
Yeah, I think your average listener could hear something and be like, this feels very Japanese. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like, and that could go into like, we can always go into, we're talking about mixing right now.
Yeah.
But that could go into like arrangement, chord progressions, instrumentation, stuff like that. But we're sticking with mixing and in just the mixing aspect. So region-based, genre-based, like, for example, like Afropop, the percussion is a big part of the element from an arrangement and instrumentation bass, producing bass, but from a mixing bass, like Jesse does this super well, where he allows the top end of the percussive instrument, like volume wise, the percussion instrument is fairly loud, fairly on top of the beat, and it's driving the song.
Yeah. It's brighter than you would think. Yeah. Like listening closely.
And they're very transient.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not wet. It's fairly dry. So it kind of gives this, like, there's an emphasis. Again, when it's fairly dry, there's an emphasis in rhythm and danceability. Mm-hmm. And I also think there's like, it feels raw and like happy. It feels more natural. Mm-hmm. When there's a lot of reverb, it kind of smear things and makes it feel more like 80s and vintage and like electronic in a certain way. So like the fact when things are dry, it feels more natural. It feels more dancey. It feels real. It feels live, intimate in that sense. Yeah, so it's like, I think these things change. And so anyway, you find these strings, these patterns in genre, even in the same genre, in different songs and labels and artists and how they kind of, like different artists, not labels, but different artists and how they prefer to create their sound. Wolfpack has a significantly consistent tone, even though their mixes change from song to song slightly, but they have a good consistent tone across all their songs. And this is another thing too, is like the consistency of tone with throughout an album is important, or may be important, may not be important. So it's like, I feel like the end job of the engineer is to be able to analyze and articulate emotional aspects through technical terms. So when someone asks, can I make turn this right now? It's just like, it's just, I need it to be bigger.
Yeah.
What does that mean? And you should be able to reference your repertoire of songs that you've already listened to and analyze and be able to understand and communicate well enough with the producer, the artist, whoever is giving the creative notes enough where you're able to discern what they mean by bigger.
Yeah. No, I get that. A fun practice that I think people do practically. I talked about on the exclusive podcast a little bit. It'll just help you better understand genre to genre, the most of these points like frequency and volume balance. And also it'll help you understand how your monitors translate onto other listening devices is choosing whatever your reference song is and listening to it at different volumes and taking note of what stays and what vanishes and what comes into like to light as you turn up or down.
Interesting.
And that could give an emphasis. And so like rap, for example, because this will also tell you how things will translate. Like rap, for example, the low end is most likely to stay. Like if you're your neighbor who listens to music too loud on their sub, you're just going to hear the boom, 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 and not like the vocal or anything else. Where if your neighbor was listening, or like, where if it was the song I talked about earlier, the Spanish song, you're going to be hearing the voice and the percussion throughout it. And so I think that's a good reference, I think, for turning it down. What stays when you turn down your monitors tends to be what is a constant in that genre. Turning it up, as you turn it up, hearing what comes back. And then if you do that on, you know, your headphones or whatever else, if you do checks on other things, it'll help you realize how that translates too. But I think that's a good practice to help you realize like what's the most essential things. Because from a marketing standpoint, it's like, those are the things that you're only going to hear, or that like someone's going to hear if they're walking around the mall, they hear a song coming from a store. They'll only hear like those two or three things that stay when it's quiet until they go in and hear like the whole song. But I think that's an important thing too. And all these things go into that as well. If it's a very low end heavy song, they're likely going to just hear the low end when it's turned down more.
Yeah, this is actually a really good point. Like with Headroom, there was a song that I did for a test with interns testing this theory. Mm-hmm. I bounced two mixes, and one, I turned down the drums, like one, maybe 2 dBs. I think it was just 1 dB to prove a point. And I said, there's something different about these two mixes.
Yeah.
Can you hear? So I had each of the interns go up to the front, sit in the middle of the room in the listening position. I had them A, B, the mixes.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, emotionally, what's the difference? Just emotions, not technically. Emotionally, what's the difference? Because technically, you can barely hear a difference.
Yeah.
And I don't even think it was like a big enough difference to be able to like confidently say the drums are slightly quieter. Because it's only 1 or 2 dBs.
Yeah.
But as they were comparing and they were A-Bing, it was very clear to everyone that one was less aggressive than the other.
Hmm.
It was marginal. Yeah. And it wasn't a huge difference. Yeah. But this one, for some reason, was a little bit more easy listening than the other one. It's less aggressive.
Yeah.
And I think that that speaks volumes into how mixing is, how much of an effect mixing has on the emotional response and the image of a song.
Yeah.
Another thing that's like very interesting from a mixing level, and obviously this song has a lot to do with production as well, and the use of the beat itself is just funny.
Yeah.
But you listen to like Project Pat's, what's that song called? Project Pat, Take the Charge. You've heard the song. It's like a meme song at one point. Mm. She's a freaky young gal, a bisexual, but a hustler though, and will sell some snow.
I
and it's like, it's like the juxtaposition, the juxtaposition of this like hard rapper over this like kind of like vaporwave, but like this like video game lobby music.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really interesting emotionally. So it's like, it's easy listening thing, but the lyrics are really hard. But it's like, there's not a lot of low end. It's like really intimate. It's like kind of like this. It's funny. Like tonally, it's funny.
Yeah.
And it's very, not funny, but it's interesting. And I think that, I mean, obviously arrangement and production and instrumentation is super important with all of these same aspects as well. But I think it's also important to incorporate, like, as a mixer, if you're listening to this just from a mixing position, it also has a heavy influence on this stuff. And, like, this is also part of the reason, the last thing that I'm going to make, the last point I'm going to make is, like, the reason why remasters kind of suck. and, like, as from a modern mixing standard perspective.
Yeah.
September by Earth, Wind & Fire. This is the same exact example I use on all like every podcast episode.
Uh-huh.
Like it's fucking sucks. It sucks. Like from a like there's not low end extension. That it's like kind of a little bit too airy. It's flimsy. It's weak because the compression isn't properly used. There's not a good use of low end.
Mm-hmm.
From a recording perspective, like the horns are out of tune, and they like you can tell like they're running out of gas by the end of the song. They didn't re-record. It's not perfect.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Because if you remix it to modern, current tonal balance standards for that genre, where like Wolfpack is like old school, but they've got modern low end.
Yeah.
So it's like this combination of like, or like Bruno Mars is like old school top end, but with modern low end or modern low mids.
Yeah.
Whereas like September, Earth, Wind & Fire is like lack of low mids and lack of low end. And just, it's just accidentally top end heavy.
Yeah.
That's like very vintage feeling. But like this like, modern vintage vibe, if they mixed it to a modern vintage vibe, it changes the emotional response and it's not as well received. And if for me, like I always joke and say, I'll kill whoever remixes it to modern mixing standards. It's just not the same.
Yeah.
And I think this is part of the reason why my argument for this is the reason why labels prioritize mixing and mixing will always be important. And they don't like, except for Kanye, who's changing the game on this, who like changes his mixes after the song's already been released. Like Irko Sensen V2 mixes after the song's already been out for a week. You know, like that's a little bit different. But I think part of the reason why they don't do that is pragmatic, because I think the first time you listen to a song, the more that you listen to a song, I think the tonal balance, the compression, the density, the original volume width and effects, even if you can't articulate it, leaves a specific feeling, which turns into nostalgia. And there is an impact and a feeling that remains there. When I listen to Michael Jackson, it feels 90s, it feels 2000s or whatever era that I'm listening to, it feels 80s, right? And that's what it's supposed to be. And like you listen to any 2000s trance, it sounds like 2000s trance. You know,
you need the nostalgia there.
Like there's like, and now after it's been years, there's a feeling of nostalgia, but that nostalgia comes from a recognition of something. Recognition of some sort of technical or emotional use of mixing, arrangement, production that they don't do anymore. And that's another like reason why a lot, some of these newer songs, like Silk Sonic feels old, but it's still modern, you know? I wonder, like, two like the emotional, the original is initial emotional response and memory of a song is very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's how we connect memory sometimes is like through sounds and music, right? It's one of the aspects. And I think just that alone is a reason why mixing is important.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Yeah, that reminds me of when, oh my gosh, Sam Smith, his Gloria song or Glory, the one song about religion or whatever, the da 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 da.
I'll be waiting for.
Yeah, it was originally, he like just released clips
Unholy.
Of him work of it. Yeah, and then people got hooked onto that, and they didn't like how the one that actually came out sounded. And again, I think that kind of relates to what you said. Like, they just got hooked onto how it originally, how the first time they heard it sounded, and not whatever the mixed and mastered version was.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Yeah, it reminded me of that. I just thought it was interesting.
Which could go into the conversation of why the top mixers in the world, if you ever have a chance to listen to before and after these mixes, some of the top mixes in the world, like Serban Ganea, like they're online. If you look hard enough, there's a, I think it was a Weezer or a Red Hot Chili Pepper. I'm pretty sure it's Weezer. Serban Ganea, you can hear a before and after of Serban's mix versus the non-Serban mix. And I think the story, the lore is that they went with the non-Serban mix.
Hmm.
And you can hear the difference. It's one of the few songs where you can have a direct A to B comparison.
Uh-huh.
And you will be so surprised how little of a difference there is.
Hmm.
I think part of it is one of the reasons that we must consider in the point of this episode is that, yes, you could call it demo-itis, which is very, very externalizing.
Yeah.
Because it makes it, because saying that it's a,
that's kind of its own subject.
Yeah, that's blaming other somebody else. Yeah, like, they just have demoitis. It sounds like an excuse.
It's disregarding.
Yeah, it's disregarding. Yeah, there you go. It's over-reductive of what, like, what it actually is, which is, like, purposeful taste.
Yeah.
And so, like, they don't, in order to respect the original flavor, respect the original purpose of the song, which may be different from what you think the song should do, they do less and less and less. So it's, like, it's funny to say out loud, but like, yeah, it's very normal for mixers that charge a lot to do very little.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why we talk about that in the main podcast too, is being able to know when not to do something.
Yeah,
and
this is the main podcast.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. I'm just used to talking to you on the exclusive episodes. but like that, I think that has a lot to do with it. Like respecting the original mix and kind of going off of that rather than changing it.
Yeah. No, I like that. I'm trying to think of final thoughts. We talked about the vibe of things like that, but again, like I said, I had a not ideal setup and I was able to get clients, win them over through that setup because I studied references. And if you don't have your taste yet, I think that's important to develop your own taste of mixes that you like. For me, my taste developed by first just hearing who people said were the best mixers, like Manny Marroquin, Serban Ganea, like the ones that you always hear, and listening to their mixes and like seeing which ones I at least know from that point they're great mixers, and then seeing kind of like which mixes in particular were ones that I liked to my taste. So yeah, that's like kind of like its own subject, like developing your own taste in mixing. But it's helpful referencing. Yeah. Understanding your monitors. You could get really good mixes from non-ideal setups. If you just, you're going to have to heavily reference in a lot of setups, but it could be very helpful to do.
Yeah. The last thing that I was going to say, and to tie it all together, well, first off, before I say the last thing, James is a cool dude, right? Go sign up for the exclusive episodes of the Mixing Music Podcast where we talk about this sort of stuff and James and I break down mixes. We did
a mix breakdown and we talk about, there are some things that you can't talk about on the public episodes that we get to go into. You recently gave a break, like you did some mix shootouts that you were able to talk in about in some detail, which was, I think, a very helpful episode. But yeah, we get to talk about more very technical stuff.
Yeah, things that we don't, for privacy reasons, don't want to talk about in the open public, and I think are very useful and helpful.
Yeah.
There's some exclusive content there. Go check out mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive, $4 a month or $40 a year.
Yeah.
All right. The last thing that I was going to say to tie it all together is, I think this is the difference between mediocre mixers and great mixers, is you'll notice in every single mix with the masters, the reason why people say just use your ears, bro, and why that will always consistently be the highest level advice that anybody gives, is because when people are learning the technical tool of compression, of EQ, they dive into the technical aspect, boxiness. Like they start to like 500 amps boxiness. Oh, 3K can be harsh, but present. And they forget about the emotional, the connection between the emotional response and the technical. They go all into the technical detail. Can you hear compression? Well, hearing compression is one thing, but like, what is compressing this vocal doing to the song emotionally?
Yeah.
And people don't, people like everybody that gets into mixing, almost everyone that gets into mixing, you have to go, and I call it the valley of technicality, where it's just you have to go through this learning phase where you accidentally forget about the ties of emotion and technical, and you dive deeply into technical, and your mixes kind of suck.
Yeah.
It's because you forget about the musical aspect of it, the emotional aspect of it. And this is why all of the advice of the top mixers ever will always be something along the lines of just use your ears, mix emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most boring advice, but it's the point of that is because everybody who has gone through the valley of technicality comes out and finds the plateau of productivity, which is the deep connection of the technical with the emotional. So a compressor to a properly seasoned engineer isn't just a dynamic tool. It may be a tool to add aggression, to add intimacy. It may be a tool for like for something emotional. And that is where mixers start to really get good.
Yeah.
So when you're using your tools, the takeaway is when you're using your tools, when you're EQing, when you're compressing, when you're limiting, when you're saturating, when you're clipping, when you're doing anything, remember to link, mentally connect the neurons in your brain, link the technical things that you're focused on to the emotional outcome. When you're, even when you're placing a vocal of how loud the vocal should be, don't think about just technical, think about emotional. What, how is the volume of the vocal compared to the instrumental changing the vibe of the song?
Yeah.
Once you can properly connect and bridge those two very separate left brain, right brain thinking ideas together is when a mixer becomes great.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't even have anything to add on top of that. Yeah.
Cool.
Amen. Amen to this man.
All right. Any other shout out, James? How can people find you?
James Dean Mixes on all social media platforms. I have a website. Also jamesdeanmixes.com. I just remodeled it. I have a logo now. I worked with a really good graphic designer and she helped me get a logo. But yeah, feel free to check that out. That's kind of the main things. And check out the exclusive episodes. We promise you won't regret it.
Don't check out James's mixes. James out James's logo. Check out James's logo.
Yeah. Unless you're a paying client, then please check out my mixes. Unless you're, yeah. If you're cool. If you're not cool, you don't have to. But I know if you're cool, you'll look at them.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. Happy mixing, my friends. And stay saucy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.